This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Yankee Gathering 2020. That is sponsored by the New England Magic Collectors Association, or the NEMCA, N-E-M-C-A, and they are going to be having an online convention this year. For 2020, they've decided we're going to do this all online, and it's just going to be super and something completely different, and you get to enjoy the registration price of a tenth of what it would normally be for signing up for this convention. For a lot more information on that, we're going to be talking a little bit later with Michael Mayo, who is with NEMCA, and he'll give us some insight. But if you want to know a little bit more in depth, if you'll just go over to the Magic Convention calendar, there you will see a link that you can just click on and listen to a short promo for the Yankee Gathering 2020. Thank you guys very much for sponsoring this podcast, and I look forward to hopefully joining you for that convention then as well, coming up November the 14th and 15th. Well, this week we're going to go back to school. I never had a chance actually to study theater or drama in college, as some magicians have, although it's something that I feel that I lack in my education, and I have had to learn it through the School of Hard Knocks, as many of us have. But this week we're going to feature someone who has been classically trained, Mr. Patrick Thurns, and he goes by the name of Sir Patrick. Patrick actually had not only been classically trained, but he had an act that he put together, and it was honed to perfection by the late Joni Spina. For those of you who may have attended the Magic Live convention a few years back, Joni was one of the speakers and had brought out Patrick to show, first of all, a video of what his act was like and what it is now. And that was something that completely changed his life, and he's going to talk a little bit about that here today, as well as giving us some very important tips and guidelines and things how we can develop our own character and perhaps comport ourselves better on stage as well. So please welcome my guest this week, Sir Patrick, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a guest from Cincinnati, Ohio, Mr. Patrick Thurns, who goes by the name of Sir Patrick, his stage name. And this is a gentleman who has developed an amazing act and gone from one extreme to another in developing his act, and has completely reworked it. And he had a wonderful teacher in Joni Spina and was also the highlight of Magic Live a few years ago. And so we're going to get into all that and more. So please welcome my friend, Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me today.
Well, you're welcome. I'm so glad that we have a chance actually to sit down and talk about this in detail, because that we have chatted, of course, at some of the conventions where I've run into you, like at Magic Live and elsewhere. And at those conventions, of course, those are just kind of short snippets where we get to say, hey, hello, what's going on, and what are you doing and working on? So here we get to go into a little bit more detail. I love going to conventions, certainly, and Magic Live is a good one. And there again, though, a lot of times you don't get a chance to visit in detail because there are so many people who are at that convention. I mean, what, 1,800? People or so. How long have you been going to Magic Live?
I go to Magic Live whenever I can. The first time I was out there was when I worked with Joni. That was, I think, 2006.
Wow. Boy, time does fly. 2006. Yeah. And that was your first one that you had attended, and you were on stage before everybody the first time you were there.
Yes. So that was quite interesting. I said in other... I said in other interviews that, you know, my only goal during that thing was trying not to pee myself. So, and let's just say mission accomplished for that.
That's
so
good news.
I'm always grateful for that and basically overall and everything what Joni gave me. So it was a wonderful blessing to be able to work with her. So
you live in Cincinnati and you've got a good group of magicians throughout the whole state. It seems like that that they have great conventions there with the Magi Fest. And do you attend the Magi Fest frequently as well?
Oh, I go every year. I try to, well, I try to go every year when I don't have a booking. Mm-hmm. You know, as a performer, money comes, money and gigs come first.
That's
so
right.
If you're able to work, take the work when you can get it. So if that means missing a convention and time and hanging out with my friends,
right.
I'm sure nobody is going to fault us for doing that.
Well, that's true. You know, that's another thing. As far as conventions, a lot of times the people will not attend, let me say, they won't register for a convention early because they're thinking, well, I might get a job or something will come at the last minute and I don't want to have to lose my money for the registration. And so they will mm-hmm. attend at the last minute, which is a problem then for the organizers because they're planning on X number of people coming. And at the last minute, there'll be this deluge like in the last 2 or 3 weeks of people who are coming in. But it's because exactly, I think, a lot of that in which the people are hoping and expecting there might be something that's coming through. And if it doesn't, say, hey, then I'm going to go and hang out with my friends. So that's true. So I assume that you've been going to the Magi Fest since back when they had the red coats with Jeff Hostetler and everybody.
Yes. Oh, yes. I remember when before Joshua Jay and them took it over, the first ever magic competition I ever entered was at Magi Fest, and I bombed horribly.
Well, you've got to start someplace, huh?
Horribly.
Now, what,
like,
what was
the point where I was rethinking, do I really want to do this? You know, it was literally that bad where I'm like, is this the road I really want to go down?
Was it that you felt like that you weren't getting the response from the audience, or was there something that just didn't go right in your act, or what?
Well, it was a combination of other things that kind of led into a perfect storm. Because this is before I met Joni, before, well, I always was in magic, you know. I got the standard magic kit when I was 10 years old, and the joke with that is my mother and father bought it for me because I didn't think I was smart enough to figure out how the stuff worked. But let's just say it horribly backfired, and now I'm terribly addicted, like all of us are. So, but got that started. I was very introverted as a child. The only real thing I liked to do was watch, you know, old black and white silent comedies, Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, Buster Keaton, Marx Brothers, Three Stooges. I love Red Skelton.
So it's physical comedy that really turns you on.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely. And there's a science and a method and a madness behind all that. You just don't get out there and act a fool. There is a method behind that madness.
What have you studied about that? What is it that kind of attracted you to that?
It's just the fact that they were funny. And I just remember sitting there watching my father watching that stuff with me and him just laughing. And I'm going, okay. Because I got it. Because I was laughing.
Oh.
And I just remember sitting there watching that with my family and everybody's just enjoying themselves and laughing. And then I started watching people that kind of reminded me of them of me, like Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, Fatty Arbuckle. And so I started watching them, and I was the weird kid in grade school and high school that didn't really gel with the other kids because I knew I wanted to perform, but I didn't really know how. I did magic, but I didn't really tell people or show people that I did magic. It was mainly just for me in my room with my books, with my kits, with my decks of cards and whatever I had around the house at the time doing stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I remember going in and auditioning for my very first musical because I was in choir.
In high school?
This was in high school. I went to an all-male preparatory high school in Cincinnati. I went graduated from Elder High School, class of 2000, and it was an all-male Catholic high school. But the musicals, the performing arts, they did with our sister high school, literally right next door, Seton. So it was a chance for me to hang around girls.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, okay.
You're not completely crazy. You got a method there.
Exactly.
That madness.
So do I want to try and do sports and in high school at the time, get all sweaty and be around a bunch of guys, or do I want to go next door and hang after school and hang out with the girls? You tell me which one I'm going to follow.
Yeah, no brainer.
So I did that, auditioned, and ended up getting in and got up there. And the show was Hello Dolly. I remember this. The show was Hello Dolly. And for some reason, they needed somebody to be the court clerk. I was in the chorus, but then they just figured out they didn't assign the role of court clerk. So they were going in to block the scene. And the director literally just looked at me and said, Patrick, here, take the script and just get up there. And when I point to you, say this line. So I'm like, okay. So I get up there and I, following along in the script, it came to my line. I said the line, but for some reason, I chose to say the line in a high-pitched character voice.
Okay.
Don't know where that came from, and it got a laugh from the director. And the director just says, keep it. I'm like, okay. So did that during the shows, and I got a laugh. So during the shows, I'm there going, okay, this is kind of nice. I'm on stage. I don't feel weird. I'm in control of the laughter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not being the one being made fun of. I'm making the people laugh.
Right.
So for me, I'm going, it just clicked something. And then in the talent shows in high school, I would see, I still love, I have a small Red Skelton collection of his memorabilia and autographs and scripts from his shows and that he did, and I bought at auction. But I used to study him and his movement in pantomime, and during the talent shows, I would do the old Red Skelton bits. I would get up there and do Gertrude and Heathcliff,
yeah,
you know, as a 16, 17-year-old kid, and I would do, you know, the Red Skelton pantomimes, a piece of hot bacon being fried on a hot griddle, you know, on the stage, and I would do Guzzler's Gin,
yeah,
you know, in high school, and the older people in the audience was just laughing.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going, okay. And then I started to get more and more into theater, developing characters, but always still did magic. So at the time, I considered myself an actor who did magic. In my brain, I didn't really consider myself a magician until I got into my 20s, till I graduated from college. And I'm like, okay, I mean – and that's when the magic bug really started to kick for me, was early 20s, when I really was in finishing up college and getting done with that, is when, right, I came full hard into magic.
Prior to that, you had never really performed for money to do a show, magic show.
Right. So, yeah. Right. It was for me, or I would do the occasional, you know, somebody's like, oh, I need somebody for my kid's birthday party. Oh, okay. You know. Or I would do it as like a part of a talent show or something. But I made my living at the time working in a restaurant, or I was in theater. I was an actor. And then I've got to the point where I direct shows. I directed shows. I stage managed shows. So I come from the theater background. And so within the theater community around here, I'm known as the retired actor who is now a magician. is how I'm known around here. Even to the point now where they know I'm retired from theater, but regional theater groups around my area will still call me in to consult on shows, where it's either helping them to sit and be on the board when they're casting a show, or if there's a show that has heavy special effects, I'm the one they bring in to – tech the show for the special effects. I've done a lot of productions of Disney's Beauty and the Beast, working on the special effects for that. I've done recently, like last year, I did a production of Pippin, where from the ground up, I got to design all this stuff that was not in the script, where the director was an old theater friend of mine, where we started out in shows together. And he's like, look, the opening song in this is magic to do. So of course we need magic in this show. And I know and I don't want to offend how I'm going to say this, but this is how the director put it. I didn't want to hire a birthday party magician to be the consultant for this.
Right.
With you, I know you understand theater. I know you know the magic. So just design the magic for this show. And I added magic in places in the script where it didn't call for it. So I was really proud of that.
And did you ever, or since you say you're kind of retired, or you are retired from actor, jokingly, but do they ever, when asking you to consult, and then you're kind of, as you're blocking and walking through, say, you know, actually, you would be better in this part. Why don't we have you do this? So have you come back from time to time and had bit parts as opposed to just being a consultant?
One time where I was, I hate to say this, or one time I was training an actor, the show was Seussical. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a musical based off Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
And it was during the, what is it, Circus McGurkus scene where they're supposed to, Cat in the Hat's on stage, and they're supposed to be, the director had vision in his head, Cat in the Hat's on stage setting the scene, curtain opens, and there's this big circus scene. Actors doing different variety circus stuff. Then he wanted a magician center stage doing fluff,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing what we would call instant gratification.
Right.
Fluff.
Flash, yeah.
Right. Flash, thank you. So I'm teaching the actor doing it, and the actor just not was getting it, what I'm trying to teach him. And so I'm teaching him spring flowers. I'm assuming your audience is all magicians
yes.
here, so I can talk
right.
a little.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm showing him spring flowers, you know, simple appearing cane, simple, and he's just not grasping it. And I had a gig afterwards, so I was prepped to go in my gig, and I just reach in my case, and I pull out my set of Lincoln rings. And I'm just backstage just warming myself with my Lincoln rings, getting myself
yeah.
warmed up for my gig following. Right. And the director sees me doing, you know, just a standard linking ring routine. And he looks at me and he's like, that's it, Patrick, you're the magician now. Wait a minute, what? I am the magician. He's like, no, I want you center stage doing the linking ring routine. Curtain's going to open up and you doing the big old linking ring routine. So that was the last time I was really
in the show
on stage. Yeah. And it was like a 2 minute little cameo, as you call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and so they got rid of the guy who was the actor and said, okay, you're.
Well,
you're,
they found another part.
Another part for him. Okay, good.
Yeah. He didn't lose the gig. I mean, he was yeah. still part of the chorus, but they gave him something else in the show to do.
Well, I kind of got you off track a little bit earlier when you were saying that you had entered the contest and that everything
yes.
that could possibly go bad did. So
yes.
if you can give some advice on what you had done wrong to others so they can watch out and not repeat your steps.
I just didn't follow. See, at the time, this was because at the time I was heavy in my theater phase,
mm-hmm.
my life, where I was overanalyzing everything. And I'm like, I come from a theater background, so I'm going to make this as artistic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was trying to do a straight up play. And it was that thing of, I don't want to say it was too hip for the room, but they didn't understand what I was doing. Because as an actor, when you're doing a play or a musical, there's something called the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
You never break the fourth wall. We're magicians. We break the fourth wall all the time.
Right, right.
Unless it's an artistic moment that you decide not to. Well, I didn't know that at the time. So I'm not acknowledging the audience. It was a very somber piece. And it just died a horrible death.
In your mind, it was very artistic. And
yes.
everything as you were preparing it. But did you kind of, as you were going through this, thinking, come on, people, don't you recognize what I'm doing? Or were you thinking, oh my gosh, I got to hurry and finish this and get out of here?
It was more like, I need to hurry up, get off stage and just sit in a corner and cry.
yeah.
It was basically about that because I was just starting to hang out with magicians,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm like, oh my God. People I've watched on TV and grew up idolizing is just are seeing me bomb horribly. And it's just, So, and I just didn't know who I was as a performer. And then I saw Joni at that Magi Fest. She was the lecturer.
Yeah.
And got her card, and it said director on her card. I'm going, oh, character development and director. I'm like, oh. I'm used to working with directors. I was in theater, so I understand the director's mindset. Because a lot of magicians, and I'm trying to, because I don't want to offend anybody out there, because a lot of magicians are not used to working with a director. They are used to being their own player, and I'm going to put these in theater terms. Magicians are used to being their own playwright, which means they write their own pieces. They're used to being their own stage manager. They're used to being their own director. If they're lucky enough to have a video camera, they will set it up and watch it. But that's about it. And they have friends and family around them telling them they are the greatest thing in the world. And they are afraid to be honest with.
I think also you need to add to that marketing, because a lot of magicians think that they can do everything, which means in marketing, there is a ton of stuff that needs to be done, of whether it's going to be the website, it's going to be the contracts and working with clients, talking with them, closing the deal, making the deal. And then, of course, the setup and getting to the show and setting up your stage, your backdrop, the curtains, the lights, the sound and everything, and tear down everything. There's just a lot of stuff that a lot of magicians will do on their own without asking for a third party. And if you look at any successful business, those people will always have departments or people who will do whatever is good that is their specialty. In other words, they'll hire a PR company who will promote them. They'll hire an agent who will book them and work out with the contracts and everything. So, so you'll have all these different people, and someone who is a director who is outside that's objective and having another look at you rather than, as you say, than Patrick, and people who are your friends and family. They're going to be patting you on the back saying you're great. That's why a lot of restaurants fail. There are people who open up a restaurant thinking that they have had their family and friends over, and they said, this is the most delicious lasagna I've ever had. You should open an Italian restaurant. And you think, by golly, I should. And you go and get some investors, or you go to the bank and take out a loan, and you last 6 months and nobody shows up. It's like you're just another Italian restaurant, you know. So it's just you need to have that outside person looking at you, and too few magicians do that. I mean, I know there's some expense involved, but it depends. There's a difference between an amateur and a professional, or a part-time professional who wants to go full-time professional. That's the thing that will differentiate you really from the people who are at the top, and there's a big chasm before you get to that next level of B people, you know?
Yeah, and it's the old adage is you need to have the solid product. Before you can even think about promoting yourself or your business, you need to first and foremost make sure you have that solid product, i.e. you need to make sure you have a solid show, because anybody can get that one-time booking.
Good point.
It's whether or not, if your show is of the standard that you're selling it at, you might not get that booking ever again. Then your reputation is going to follow after that.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, Bob Brown and Brenda, many years ago, had an act that was, I feel, in my opinion, fairly pedestrian, with the milk pitcher and some other things that he did. And perhaps the best part of Bob Brown and Brenda was Brenda, you know, being the assistant who was on stage. But the point is that he knew how to promote and advertise himself literally all over the world. And without going into a lot of detail, his advertising was first rate, first class. And as a result, that it looked cool, clean, and crisp, and he would get booked at the greatest places and the casinos all over the world one time. And then it's like after he came in, it's like, we'll let you know if, you know, for your next booking. I think people who are going to listen to this will say, no, he was repeat booking. He worked a lot at the same place. Well, I don't know. He was just okay in my book. He was a real nice guy, great marketer, but as far as his show, there were others who were much better. Let me put it that way. And I think that those who booked him in these casinos probably saw also, well, we could get somebody else of the day. And so you're right. People will book you one time based upon your promotional material.
Yeah. And then it just goes back to the old adage. You have to look at your business model and stuff and think, what's my audience? Who am I working for?
Yes.
Am I working for laymen, are the ones paying my writing the checks, or are magicians the one?
Boy, you hit the nail on the head there. That's for sure. I mean, you got to look at, are you looking to try and make money off of magicians, like working at conventions or doing lectures and things and selling product? Or are you looking at actually making an income off of corporate audiences and casinos and theater shows and working for the public, basically.
Like my character and my act is very much I family friendly layman. My audience is layman. Yes, I enjoy working and I love hanging around magicians sure. and being at conventions and the conventions I've worked. I loved it and I want to do more of it, but I know where my market is. I know laymen are the ones that ultimately at the end of the day are signing the paychecks. And do I want to fool a magician? Well, yes. I mean, as a magician, sure. we want to fool other magicians, but at the end of the day, if I just entertain you, I'm happy because this is entertainment. Mm-hmm. Our job is to make the audience forget about their troubles for just a little bit of time, suspend their disbelief, and follow us on this journey that we're taking them on. Because at the end of the day, they are spending their money. There's a lot of entertainment variety choices that they can choose to spend their money on. And they chose to spend their money to come and view you as a performer. So it's really that love you have to give to that audience.
Wow, that's well said. So what is your definition of the word magic?
Oh, my definition of the word magic is just the feeling you get from watching a great entertainer.
Okay. So magic is really a feeling.
That's why in my promotional material, I don't bill myself as a magician. In my heart, I consider myself a magician. But on my promotional material, it says, Sir Patrick, magical entertainer. Mm-hmm. Because in the course of my one-man show that I do in theaters at 70 minutes, I do magic, I do a little bit of juggling, I do pantomime, I do a lot of clowning, and by clowning, I don't mean like circus clowning, I mean like theatrical vaudeville-style pantomime clowning, a lot of interacting with the audience, so it's a whole spectrum that I take the audience, or I try to take the audience on.
Right. Well, I recall again that Joni Spina, as you said, that she was giving these lectures and she was going around different conventions and she would talk about being a director. And then for a while that she had also had a column at Magic Magazine in which that she was soliciting people to send in their videotapes. And then she would review them if you were willing to take that public, if it could be, humiliation, you know, just kind of exposure, I would guess you could say, of saying, okay, I'm going to bare my soul to the group and let her dissect that, saying, okay, here's what can, from my perspective, be corrected or changed in your act. And a lot of people had taken her up on that, and so she was getting that. But I remember talking with her at the time, and as I recall, it was difficult at first. I mean, it wasn't like everybody was willing to bare their souls and to send something in. So it was kind of hard to get a few people. But once they did, I think the ball started rolling. And then she started then at conventions also giving directions in her room. So she had, I know, given private lessons, because when I talk with her from time to time at conventions, that she was between clients. I go up to her room and she said, well, I've just got a few minutes because I got Patrick coming in, you know, in a few minutes or something. So do you recall going and taking lessons from her like that privately at conventions?
No, I worked with her over videotape and over Zoom. Over Skype. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. over Skype. So majority of our work was over the internet until the prep for Magic Live, where we were with each other for like 2-3 days beforehand before Magic Live.
To Vegas early.
Yeah, I came to Vegas 2-3 days early to work with her in person, but we spent, 3 to 4 months ahead of time over the internet every day for like 2 hours, 2-3 hours.
Yeah, when you first sent your video to her and she viewed that, did she immediately come back and say, I think I can give you some direction here, and you hit it off immediately? Or how'd that?
Well, she sent me a list of notes. Well, she sent me a video back that I watched, and of her watching my video and giving critiques. And she was just like, okay, watched it. And then she just talked it up to me and just asked me point blank questions that I had to answer and send back to her. And that began the dialogue.
Yeah.
And so we tried to tweak some stuff, and then she gave me her notes. Like, you need to look at the audience. You need to acknowledge the audience. You need to focus on the audience. Because stuff we worked on really wasn't about the magic. It was about the performance. And so.
Now, when you say the performance, you're talking about not the tricks per se that you were doing, but the order they were in and perhaps how that it built into an act and built emotion and how it was blocked or what?
No, before that. Huh. Before that, it was starting off because I told her about my background as an actor.
Yeah.
And stuff. And so it was about character development, developing a character. Mm-hmm. From the ground up, how an actor approaches building a character, and Joni understood all this. She was amazing. She knew I would describe to her what I would want, and she would pick out the music. She would understand the. She would tell me she would literally block me, as a director would block an actor. You're going to walk up here, you're going to pick this up, you're going to do that. But then it was a collaborative effort. I would throw out my ideas and we would try both and see what gelled. Because the act that I did was roughly 50-50. 50% her, 50% me, and we formed this hybrid thing. But the biggest thing was the developing the character. Who was Sir Patrick?
This week's episode of the Magic Word Podcast is sponsored by the Yankee Gathering 2020, which is sponsored by the New England Magic Collectors Association, or NEMCA, and that's going to be a virtual convention coming up on Saturday and Sunday, November the 14th and 15th. So that's just right around the corner, and I have with me today Mr. Michael Mayo, who's going to tell us a little bit about that. I'm so glad that you're here, and also so glad that you're actually bringing us these opportunities online. So tell me, what kind of special thing is going to make this different from regular conventions?
Well, it's going to be done virtually because we can't get together in person, and we really wanted to make sure that everybody had the opportunity to get their magic history fix. So we put together close to the actual convention as we could do online. We have lectures and exhibits, some 3D tours, and a couple special presentations as well.
And the advantage of the virtual convention, obviously, is that people can be anywhere in the world, and certainly some of your speakers, I guess, are going to be coming in from other countries.
Yes, absolutely. We have some people over in London and and some regular lecturers that we've had for quite some time, and as well as some new lecturers this year.
And this year you're going to be having as special guests Peter Lane and Byron Walker.
Yes. Every year the Yankee Gathering honors a collector and magic historian. And this year we're no different, except we're honoring two people, Peter Lane from London and Byron Walker out of California.
That sounds great. Well, everybody should go and register for that straight away. And it's only going to be $25. It's less than 10% of what the normal price would be for registering at a convention. Plus, you don't have the travel and lodging expenses that you'd normally have associated with a convention. So go and check that out. And the website, again, would be what, Michael?
That's NEMCA.com, NEMCA.com. Or you could check us out at our Facebook site at New England Magic Collectors Association. We have our page on there as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Everybody go check that out, and I'll see you online November the 14th and 15th.
Thank you, Scott.
Who was Sir Patrick?
You really didn't have a character per se. Again, when you go back to that first experience
first
you
one,
had on
no.
stage, you just were trying to be artistic, and you didn't see a character. You was trying to be an artist.
Yes, it was me in a dark suit, you know, black pants, white shirt, red tie, and then a black suit coat over it, doing cigarette manipulation, you know, making a rose appear, pouring wine out of a thing. So
and all the time having kind of a serious look on your face.
Yes. Lamenting to a picture that I made appear in a picture frame. So I don't even like to think about that.
Sorry, bringing up bad memories, huh?
No, it's just it makes me laugh now. And so did that, and then she looked at that. She said, okay, you can try this, but she said, I really don't think that's you. And that's what she said. Mm-hmm. And she said something that actually clicked with me. She said, you're an actor. What type of actor are you? Are you a character actor? Are you a leading man? Or are you a supporting player? Mm-hmm. And when she put it in those terms for me, it clicked.
But was that question directed to how you see yourself or how you believe the audience sees you?
A little bit of both. The main thing was it was how the audience sees you. Because as an actor, when you go in for a casting, you're lumped in. The casting director is looking at you. Within 2 seconds, they know if you're a leading man type or if you're a character actor.
That's right. That's right. I several years ago, talked with Jason Alexander, who played on the Seinfeld show, and he's a mind reader and a mentalist then also. Well, anyhow, as I was chatting with him, we were talking about character, and he was saying when he was on stage that he wanted to be David Copperfield and, you know, having the wind blowing through his hair. And he realized, well, I'm going to be bald. I don't have a lot of hair. That's not going to work. And it was going to look goofy. And he had to come to that realization in which that what the way the audience saw him versus the way that he would like for the audience to see him, they recognized someone who they thought he was funny and kind of a little bit funny looking. And so they were expecting comedy and humor when they saw him in his face. I liken that a little bit like to Bob Sheets. When I say Bob Sheets, I don't think necessarily of like a Rock Hudson type of a leading man type of, well, I'm going way back with that one, with a leading man necessarily, but someone who I think is kind of funny, and he is funny. And the same thing with Jason Alexander. He said, so I embraced that and said, okay, well, I can be Falstaff in a Shakespeare play. That's really more me as a jolly comedy relief kind of a person. So it is important to recognize, as you'd said, both, you know, what you want to be and how the audience perceives you. You can't force something down their throats and saying, I'm going to be this leading man, when they're looking at you and say, not really.
Yeah. I mean, in my case, I'm 4 foot 11, 5 foot with shoes on a good day, roughly 200. Well, I'm going to be generous, 270 pounds. So I'm a short, pudgy guy. I'm never going to, back in my theater days, I was never going to play Hamlet.
Yeah.
I might have gotten away with Friar Lawrence. I probably would have been cast as Friar Lawrence if we were doing Shakespeare. But the roles I was in, I was LeFou. I was Allie Hackam, because musical theater, I'm a classically trained baritone singer. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't sang truly sang in years since I retired, but I still sing every once in a while. But the roles I was going for the roles I was cast in were character roles. So I just didn't connect the two. I didn't connect the two until I started reading through old magic books after Joni put that idea in my head. And I came across the quote from Jean-Robert Houdin. A magician is an actor playing the role of a great magician. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, thank you. Magicians are actors just with giant props. Because if we could really do the stuff we're claiming to do, why are we doing corporate shows and kids' birthday parties? If I could really saw a woman in half and put her back together and stuff, I don't know about you, Scott, but I would become a benevolent dictator.
Yeah, create a religion.
Yes.
So that's what books did she recommend to you that you read and got?
Actually, she didn't. She just said look at inspiration. I was looking over just Tarbell and different books, but I was looking over some of my old acting books. Because when she said character with me in theater, I drew back on my inspiration on, okay, I knew this character. I know how I was trained, because there's different styles of acting. There's Stanislavski, there's Laban, there's Chekhov, there's different branches, and there's Adler. There's different branches as an actor, different styles. The method that always worked for me was Laban. And Laban centered around body centers, meaning if you watch every single person, they walk and move completely different than anybody else. So some people lead with their nose. Some people lead with their foreheads. Some people lead with their hips. If a woman is, let's just say, endowed, she might lead with her endowment.
Her bosoms.
Right, her bosoms. And just different people move in different ways. And Laban's thinking was, if you find the body center for the character, you can start finding the character.
Interesting.
And so the type of acting that I do when I create a character and become Sir Patrick, which I'm so grateful for my theater training for, was it's a combination of Laban and what is called total transformation acting, where the costume and the makeup really defines, really creates the character. Robin Williams used to do that in all of his roles, like when he was Mrs. Doubtfire and they put him on in all that makeup.
Right.
That was total transformation for him. He said he didn't really become the character until they put all that on. I was talking with Carissa Hendricks actually a couple days ago about this, because she has a wonderful character that she does, Lucy Darling. And it gets to a point where you've created a character so much, you are working the character as an actor like a puppeteer, but the character, and you have your script and you start following your script, but then your character is going to veer off and do something that's not in the script. And you as the puppeteer are going, okay, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
The character just takes on a life of its own, a personality of its own, because you have created this other person.
I talked to Pop Hayden about that as well. And when he created his character of Pop Hayden, changing from Whit Hayden, mm-hmm. he developed a whole legend. Basically, there is yep. a background that he doesn't bring to life on stage, but in his mind, that's what he mm-hmm. has created, that he is a time traveler.
Same way.
Yeah. And so
I'm the same way. Carissa Hendricks is the same way. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I would like to think Rob Zabrecki's the same way, because he has an amazing character that he does.
Wow. Does he?
With him, that Zabrecki does.
Yeah.
So I would like to think we're all kind of along the same approach. And of course, each person's gonna have their different approach. But yes, I know with myself, when I was creating Sir Patrick, I sat down and wrote out, and I sent it to Joni, a 3-page background info on who Sir Patrick is, where he came from, how was he developed. Just a whole different backstory where I made him a real person.
Why the name Sir Patrick? Sir Patrick.
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, did you wake up one morning and say it was it, or did you see something on a baloney or something?
Well, the Patrick came from an old friend of mine who's no longer around, a wonderful local Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky magician called Sean Dion, who he gave me my tagline, because I just always thought Patrick was unique. Pat-trick. Okay. Trick implies magic. I'm Patrick, so let's just do that. He said, you need to call yourself Patrick, and your tagline needs to be Trick is in the name. I'm like, oh, beautiful. And then I started performing for people in college, you know, doing card tricks and stuff in between classes and stuff. And there was an exchange student from England, and he looked at me and he was just always call me Sir, Sir Patrick. So it just stuck.
Yeah.
So
interesting. And so with that, see, I would think of Sir Patrick of being something kind of debonair, like perhaps a Cardini type of a character who was going to be in the top hat and tails and maybe a little, in his case, drunk that. Or something.
So I didn't want that.
Okay.
I wanted the complete opposite, because with comedy, they are expecting one thing and then you hit him around the side with a little tickle, a little.
Mm-hmm. And with the physical comedy, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a rhythm and expectations with comedy. If you look at something, and if you just see Sir Patrick, you're going to think like exactly what you said. But once you see me walk out in my costume and character, you're going, especially me doing my mannerisms, they're going, okay, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, whenever that you laugh, you are like a bowl full of jelly. I mean, it's the way that your whole body shakes from your head to your toe as you're laughing.
Yeah. So, and it's just, I created the character because of the wonderful conversation with Joni. So I sat down when I was creating the character. I'm like, okay, who are your inspirations? So I'm like, okay, Chaplin, Keaton, Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Red Skelton.
Jerry Lewis.
No, actually.
Really? Because he was a physical comedian.
Yes, but not in the creation of Sir Patrick.
Hmm.
So there were certain types, certain characteristics I took that I wanted to put into when I created the character. Because the costume, the white shirt and the tie, Groucho. White shirt and the red tie was Groucho. The derby, Chaplin. Suspenders was a nod to Fatty Arbuckle. The mannerism that I do with my tie when I flutter my tie, Laurel and Hardy. My little hand gestures, Laurel and Hardy. The looks I give to the audience, a little bit of Buster Keaton, a little bit of Fatty Arbuckle. But the love that I have for the audience when I talk, because magicians never heard Sir Patrick talk. The layman, when they come to see my full 70-minute show, Sir Patrick talks. He has a voice.
Right.
And so when I talk to the audience, my interaction with the audience, very much the interaction that Red Skelton would have with the audience.
So it's not a high voice like you did that one time you were saying when you were in theater, nor something, I guess, like Johnny Thompson would do where he had a, thank you very much.
No. Sorry, I know this is over sound, but I'll do the voice. But to do the voice, I have to put the derby on.
Okay.
Because once the derby comes on, Sir Patrick.
The character appears.
Yes.
I understand. We'll take just this momentary break until he returns.
Yeah. Sorry, this returns. The thing, because actually, before I walk out on stage, the last thing that goes on my head is the derby. My girlfriend actually tells me a lot. Once I put the derby on, she said it's like you become very narcoleptic. There's a moment as soon as the derby goes on, right? Your head goes down, your head comes off, and you become Sir Patrick.
Interesting.
It's like he suddenly appears. Hey. I'm Sir Patrick. You know, long before I was this international magic sex symbol, I grew up on a rabbit farm, and I would raise rabbits, and I would have this stick about this big, and I would just shake the stick at those rabbits, and I would be like, now you mind me. You know, one day I had a couple of rabbits that just wouldn't mind me at all, so I put them in the barn for a few days. Man, I'll never do that again. When I finally opened up that barn door, I had more rabbits than I could shake a stick at.
Okay.
It's still
now he removed his hat.
Right. It's still my voice, but it's a different
tenor,
different cadence. He has his own style. Because when I was developing the character, and actually what I tell people that I work with, because I do work with magicians and that want to develop their character, I gave them some pointers and stuff. And
so you do directing and coaching now?
Yes.
Of others?
Yes. So what I tell them is come up with three things that you want the audience to instantly know about your character or about you. Or three things you want the audience to take away from watching you. With Sir Patrick, number one is I just made a new friend.
Okay.
Two, that was fun.
Right.
Three, he knows his magic. Those are the three things. And I describe people that never met Sir Patrick as Sir Patrick is, and I actually get a little teary when I say this, because he's a part of me, but he isn't. He's a completely different side of myself that I would. Sir Patrick does stuff on stage that me as Patrick, I wouldn't have the guts to get up there on that stage and do. I'm very envious of him, the fact that he is so free on stage, where if I was to get up there just as Patrick and do the stuff that he would do, I would be too afraid and too scared to do it.
Just like people who put on clown makeup, that they will do things under makeup that they wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, it's very much that mindset. It's like what Jeff McBride says when you're wearing a mask. You're wearing a mask. When you put on the mask, you are that character.
Right.
But I describe Sir Patrick as the lovable man child.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
He is not a child. He's a fully grown man, adult, mm-hmm. but he just has childlike qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he is not, and I have to tell this to people because I had some people come up to me and say, oh, bless his heart, he's special. No, no, he is not special needs.
Yeah.
He's not autistic. Sorry. I stutter. My normal talking voice, I stutter every once in a while. But when I'm Sir Patrick, I don't, which I find that very interesting.
Hmm.
So he's not autistic. And he is not like, for your theater, for people that understand theater out there, if they've ever read the book or seen the movie or the play Mice and Men, he is not Lenny.
Okay.
From Mice and Men.
Yes.
So he's not that. He's nice to everybody. And I took a lot of this from Red Skelton, when Red Skelton would describe Freddy the Freeloader. Because Red Skelton used to say about Freddy the Freeloader, you know, he's a little bit of you, a little bit of me, a little bit of all of us. You know, Sir Patrick found out what love means. He knows the value of time.
Mm-hmm.
He knows time is a glutton that eats up life. We say we don't have time to do this or that. There's plenty of time. The trick is to apply it.
Hmm. Well said.
He doesn't ask people to provide for him because he's going to make his way
mm-hmm.
in the world. He's nice to everybody because he was taught that man was made in God's image.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never met God in person. And next fella just might be him.
Hmm.
And at the end of the day, he just wants to make a new friend.
I like that. I like that. Let me go back a moment then to that point in time when you were at Magic Live.
Yes.
In that experience, when Joni was talking about this, she showed the video of mm-hmm. your earlier performance, and then you came out in a completely different character. And you did that not once, but twice, because the way the nature of Magic yes. Live, for those who haven't attended, the theater will only hold about 800 people. And so they have one in the morning and one in the afternoon for the other 800 who would attend. So you had to do that a couple of times. And I believe I was in the earlier one, and I remember how emotional that you were because you'd said that was your first experience at the convention and for performing for all those people and for doing that act live.
On a Las Vegas stage, too.
So. Exactly. So what was going through your mind and tell me about that experience. What did that mean to you? And
I was going to say it changed my magic life, but it didn't just change my magic life. It changed my life. Not just my magic, my personal life.
Yeah, you said one of your goals was to work in the Magic Castle, which Jack Goldfinger came up and said, you're in.
Yeah, and I've performed there at the castle since then. So
mm-hmm.
It was honestly a dream come true because I got to meet and perform in front of my peers
mm-hmm.
and people that I've idolized. And just the fact now that if I send an email or, you know, and ask somebody that I've idolized for feedback and stuff, they know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're peers now.
Right.
I'm never going to take that for granted. The mm-hmm. fact that I can just sit and have a talk and we can just talk magic.
Right.
And sit down and just have fun.
And people will recognize you then, again, as an equal, as a peer, and not a wannabe or someone because you've been there, done that.
Well, we both we know that entertainment as a whole, you're only really as good as your last thing.
Yeah, what have you got for me today, kid?
Yeah. But let's just say you find out real fast who your friends are.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has been very gracious and wonderful to me. And it was just, at the last Magic Live, I got to meet David Copperfield. Mm-hmm. I got to walk up, shake his hand, and he looks down. I introduced myself, and he looks down at me, and he's like, I've heard of you. I know you. I'm like, okay, well, hi.
How gratifying is that? Wow.
Yes. And I remember having a moment with Johnny Thompson when Johnny Thompson came to Indianapolis for a show. I drove up to see him perform and talk to him afterwards. And he spent literally 20 minutes in a queue line, signing autographs, getting up, taking me aside and just talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why everybody else in line is waiting and they're going, who is this schmuck? You know, and I'm doing that. And the fact that I've gotten to work out at the Magic Castle, and the fact that I got to retire the act at the Magic Castle, because that act that I did with Joni that developed at Magic Live is, I hate to say it, sadly retired now.
So you moved on from that and got a completely different act.
From that for health reasons.
Okay.
I no longer do that act for health reasons, because few people know this about me, and actually, this is actually the first time I'm actually really talking about this. So you're kind of getting
a scoop.
Not a scoop. I don't want to. But right when I got done working with Joni at Magic Live, I came down with cellulitis in my left leg. Really bad. I was hospitalized for about 4 weeks in ICU. And since then, I developed lymphedema, chronic lymphedema, in my left leg. So my left leg is like swollen bigger than my right leg. So you've seen me around at some of the conventions, Scott, and when I walk, it's kind of
a waddle.
Yeah. So that's caused the leg. So my motion in my leg is kind of not where I wanted for that act. So.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor said, you don't have to stop performing. It's just you need to be very deliberate with your movements now. And I wanted to retire the act before I'm trying to figure out how to word this. I wanted to retire the act on my own terms.
Okay, good way of putting it.
I want to retire the act on my own terms. So I told myself, if I ever got the chance to perform at the castle again, which I did 2 years ago. I got to perform at the castle again. I did that run. And I made a promise to myself that if I completed that run and didn't harm myself with my leg, that act is retired. So I was able to do that. So I kept my promise on that.
And so the new act that you're working on or that you're doing then now, when you're performing for corporate parties, is completely different and something that doesn't require you to move around much.
Yes. Everything is scripted where it's deliberate. When I take a step, I know where I'm going. It's still, the energy is still there, but it's not as bouncing around as the other act was. So it's like a step here, a step there. It's this current development of my character is a lot more interactive with the audience.
But still the same character of Sir Patrick.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes. That was the big takeaway I got from Joni, that I thank her literally every single day. She got me Sir Patrick. She got me Sir Patrick. We sat down and started crafting the character. And I just took my theater training of developing the character, building it from the ground up. Okay, he's going to walk this way. He always had a little bit of a waddle to him because I wanted him to have that kind of chaplain. Yeah, that kind of chaplain-esque. If you kind of watch him when he walks, he has the shoes, so his stance is kind of, you know, penguin-like, so he waddles when he walks, you know, the motions, the looks. So,
right.
It's,
but really using more of your facial expression than your body expression.
Facial expressions, the way I interact with the audience a lot too.
Yeah.
Now it's the byplay with the audience.
So as we start to kind of wrap up over here, what would be some suggestions you would have for people who, since Joni's no longer with us, number one, I guess that they could contact you and you could also do some coaching and directing back and forth using Skype or Zoom or whatever.
Yes, absolutely.
If they're working on a character before they would come to you, what would you suggest that somebody does if they wanted to develop that character?
First of all, sit down with a piece of paper and make a list of 5 objectives that you want from that character. And when I say that, objectives is what do you want the audience to think about your character and your act?
Mm-hmm.
What are the 5 points that you have to, at the end of your act or your show, that you want the audience to take away? What are the 5 big takeaways from that? And then if you want to build a character, I would suggest watch people. Just sit down and watch people, because different people is going to move different ways. And mm-hmm. maybe you like the way this person walks. Let's just say you take 10 minutes, you go to a park or you go to a mall or some kind of business or something, or Starbucks, and you sit down, you have a cup of coffee, and you just people watch.
Airport would be a great place for that.
Yeah, airport. Yeah. Just sit down for 10 minutes and just watch people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you see person over to your right. Maybe they're walking a different way. The person to your left is going to be walking a different way. So maybe you like the person on your left's walk, but you're listening and you like the way the cadence and the pitch and the tone of person on your right's voice. Mm-hmm. So maybe take this walk with this, if you can, with that voice, put them together. Maybe you like watching somebody and they're real expressive and they talk with their hands a lot. They move their hands a lot. Or maybe they're just very quiet and still. They don't move a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like building a character for sketch comedy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you were to build, sit down and watch a Saturday Night Live or any of those things, the actors that do that, when they're building a character, they build them from the ground up. They're like, okay, what does this, because every character has I'm trying to put this in terms that, without getting deep into theater.
Drama,
and
theater.
Every actor is going to have a want. They're going to want something. What do they want that is going to define them in their journey? And you take that and then you're like, okay, does your character wear glasses? Does your character wear a hat? Does your character, are they sloppy dressed? Are they a sharp dresser? Mm-hmm. And if you don't think a character is for you and you just want the audience to be you, well, be you, but maybe it's you amped up a little bit.
I was thinking like Adam Sandler when he was Opera Man. You know, he has a hat and a cape and a different accent and everything. So, So you have to kind of, take all these different components. So among the 5 things, again, you're saying what? The 5 or what?
Just come up with 5. Just make a list. It's going to be different for everybody. Just make up a list of 5 takeaways that you want the audience
to remember you.
To remember about you and your show.
Okay.
And then find somebody you really trust. And I mean somebody that can literally look at you and tell you, this is crap.
Be honest with you.
You are not going to be offended by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all had those moments where we ask somebody, what do you think? And you think, and you're basically, because I found out there's 2 people in the world, when they ask you, what do you think? They either want you to lie to them and tell you, oh, it was absolutely great, or they want to know the truth. So always be prepared to have your heart ripped out of your chest and thrown down at your feet. Always be prepared for that. Don't take it personal. Because if they are really your friends, they will want you to succeed and be better.
Good advice. That's great. Well, listen, as we do wrap this up, the name of my podcast, as you know, is called The Magic Word, and I always like to ask my guests what it is that's their magic word or philosophy of life.
Oh.
Doesn't have to be a word. It could be a sentence, as I said, just a philosophy. What, when you wake up in the morning, what drives you?
Love.
Okay, perfect.
Love.
And that's all expansive. That's not just love your audience, but love yourself and love. Yeah, I love it. That's great.
But it comes out to the end of the day, love.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Patrick. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Sir Patrick, Patrick Thurns. This is Scotty out. Wow, that was great. Thank you so very much, Patrick. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, and also not just to me, but also I think the rest of the listeners who will benefit from your advice then as well. Yeah, it's too bad we don't have our friend Joni still around, but at least that you're there. So if somebody wants to contact you, you had given your information over there, and I'd encourage other people to seek out someone who can be a director for you or someone who can at least give you another objective point of view, so that way that you're not just watching yourself in the mirror and saying, hey, that looks okay, and when maybe it doesn't. Maybe it does, but I think it's good to have at least another party who is objective enough that they can help you with your act then as well. And also, that's a good idea as far as writing down those five different things to help you develop a new character or something. Great tips in there. Thanks again, Patrick. I appreciate that a lot. Well, I mentioned that, of course, this podcast is brought to you by the Yankee Gathering 2020, which is going to be November the 14th and 15th, coming up here soon. And go over to the Magic Word Podcast page where you can see the Magic Convention Guide, and it gives you a little bit more information there. If you just click on that little audio clip that we've got, it's less than 10 minutes, only about 7 or 8 minutes or so, in which that Michael Mayo will give you a little bit more information about who's going to be coming and all that. And, of course, for more information, I suggest you go to NEMCA.com. That's NEMCA.com, where you can see more about who's going to be coming up and as far as what the schedule is going to look like. And you can register through that page, and it's everything's right there where you need it. So go check that out, if you will. And if you've not also subscribed to our pod letter, it's a weekly thing that gives you an idea who's going to be on from week to week, as well as some suggestion from the archives. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to just love. This is Scotty out.